Food. Food and idols. What could be more relevant to us today, really? Okay, maybe not, but all the... Well, we do have a whole channel devoted to food, Food Network. I even watch it myself now and then. I'm not quite sure why. You're watching somebody make food that you can't smell or eat out of ingredients you probably can't even identify or afford if you can. And we don't really have an idol network, although maybe that's everything else. Maybe every advertisement we have has got something to do with that. But the thing that made me think of that was when I was reading a commentator about this whole thing, he sort of kicked off this part of 1 Corinthians as saying, what could be more irrelevant to a modern audience than food offered to idols? And of course they're right. We don't have to worry about food offered to idols. We don't have to worry about idols at all, certainly not in this context. So why are we looking at it, and why is it still here? Because when it comes right down to it, this whole passage isn't really about food. And it's not really about idols. It's a discussion of food and idols that has a much larger application to all of us. And what it's about is about love. And it's about what do we use our things for? What do we use our knowledge for? And what's better, in a sense, knowing things or acting in a loving manner? Well, putting it that way, everybody knows what the answer is already. And what the sermon title comes from is this whole idea of love building up. Because love builds up no matter what and no matter who. There's a certain kind of person, and I know them well because I am one, where being right is really important. Being correct means a lot to me. And when I was a younger person, being correct meant almost everything to me, especially if by me being correct it meant you were wrong. Well, there are times when being right isn't enough. And there are times when being right, and you are right, without love, you're actually wrong. And my younger self would have dismissed that as nonsense. The older I get, the more I realize it is true. Being right isn't all that matters. And you can be right in such a way that you are wrong. If somebody asks you a question and you shout the answer at them, well, yes, you've given them the answer, but have you given them what they need? If every time anybody asks you a question, you yell at them, how often are they going to come back to you and ask you questions? The fact that you're correct every time is completely irrelevant. People don't want to be treated that way. And what Paul is talking about here is something that we do need to have some idea of what the backstory is, what the context is. And when we think of Corinth, where thousands of years ago, where there were gods all over the place, it was a very polytheistic culture. You had Roman gods and you had everybody else's gods, were all sort of mixed together. And one of the things that characterized most worship of those kind of gods was the sacrifice of animals. Well, what do you do with an animal after you've sacrificed? Some sacrifices, it was burned to nothing. It was just ash. But most of the time, it was killed in honor of whoever. Well, now what? You can't just leave them lying around. You know, the carcass of an ox is a bit of something to deal with. So you ended up going in a couple of directions. Sometimes the priests ate it. And sometimes this meat ended up in the marketplace. Sometimes you could eat it with the priests, or you could eat it as part of your religious observation as well, and that's one of the things Paul talks about. But also, it could end up just in the marketplace. And now what? If you're someone who believes that idols still have some kind of a presence, you might not believe they exist the same way you did before, but you've moved into this new relationship with God through Jesus that Paul talks about, and you're just a little concerned about eating meat offered to idols. And because the meat in the marketplace might have been offered to an idol, and you don't know, because nobody knows. I mean, when you look at a steak, you don't know where it came from, other than it came from a cow. So these people decided that rather than risk it at all, they just wouldn't eat meat at all. And Paul is saying this is something they're doing because their conscience is weak. Now, we have to be careful. This is not a judgment on them. He's not saying there's something wrong with them. He's saying that for them, this, the reality of other people's worship and maybe their own prior worship is still affecting them. And so if they eat meat that might have been offered to idols, it would affect them. And because they didn't know, they were very cautious. And then Paul says, but people like me, we can eat anything we want because we know idols are nonsense. I'm pretty sure if you came to Paul at that point of his life and had a well-done steak or a chicken leg or whatever it was and gave it to him and said, Paul, this was offered to an idol, he'd say, what do I care? And he'd eat it because he didn't care, because he knew idols were irrelevant to his belief. But what Paul also realized, and what he talks about in here, and this is where the message comes home to us, is he realized that his behavior that made no difference to his own spiritual life or his own spiritual condition, his behavior might affect somebody else's. And somebody else might see Paul eating this meat that they were pretty sure was offered to an idol. They might know it was, or they might just be concerned that it was. And when they see Paul doing that, instead of going, oh, I hope someday I can be like Paul, what they may make this decision is, or make the mental switch into, maybe idols do mean something. If Paul is eating meat offered to idols, maybe what he said about Jesus being the only one wasn't quite as clear as I thought it was. And they, all these questions would come up into their minds. And Paul says, I'm not going to do that. He says at the end, the last verse, therefore, if what I eat causes someone to fall into sin, I will never eat meat again so that I will not cause this person to fall. Paul eating meat was perfectly right. There was nothing wrong with Paul eating meat wherever it came from. He was convinced in his own mind that meat was a gift from God for the nourishment of God's people. It was part of the created order. End of story. Paul said, rather than being right about this, I will just not do it. Why? Not out of some sense of martyrdom. Not out of some sense of this makes me even more superior than somebody else. But because Paul was concerned that his actions not cause other people problems. And that's where it connects with us. We don't worry about meat offered to idols because it just doesn't happen in Moose Jaw. But what other things might there be? Well, there's all kinds of them, and I don't know what they are for you because I don't know everyone in your circle. But for some people, the way you talk about politics, the kind of jokes you tell, the way you treat other people, the way you live your life affects other people around you. And sometimes it affects them negatively. Now, we don't always know this, and Paul is not here or anywhere else, and for that matter, Scripture nowhere tells us to read minds, to know everything, or to become perfect. That's just not what we're called to do. What we are called to do is that when we realize that our behavior causes a difficulty, an authentic, legitimate difficulty to someone else, it's up to us to modify that behavior, even though there's nothing wrong with it. Even though the behavior is right. Because context, in one sense, context is everything. We need to understand these sorts of things or we don't really know what's going on. If you're driving through a school zone and somebody passes you at 75 kilometers an hour, your first thought is probably going to be, that is a terrible human being. Speeding through a school zone of all things. Well, there's an interesting, I don't know if you call it a proverb or what it is, but there's something that every time I encounter it again, it strikes me anew, that we judge other people on their actions, but we judge ourselves on our intentions. We know we mean well, so what we do is fine. We don't know what they mean, so what they do is what we think it is. And so this person driving through the school zone, passing us illegally and speeding, we think is a terrible human being. Well, what if the person in the back seat is having a heart attack and they're getting them to the hospital? Or is having a baby? Are they still a terrible human being? No. There's someone stuck in a terrible situation and they're breaking the law, so something actually good will come from it. Everything changes when we know that. And we can't always know people's intentions any more than we can always know the outcome of our behaviors and our actions. But when we do know, Paul is telling us that if we want to be the people who follow Jesus that we want to be, we will act in love. And acting in love frequently means not doing things that you are allowed to do, that you have complete freedom to do, that when you do them, they are correct, they are right. But when I do them, they're not. So what do we do with that? Well, we can live in terror of causing someone to stumble, of interfering with somebody else's faith, and because of that become hermits, so we never see anybody. This is not the right answer, by the way. This is not what we are called to do. What we are called to do is be aware of the community that we find ourselves in, whatever it might be, our families, this community, our friends, wherever we might be. And we are called to pay attention to our actions and our behaviors as they relate to other people. And when somebody tells you, you know, when you talk that way, it makes me feel bad. Or when you talk that way, it makes me wonder, how do you go to church on Sunday? And for you, there's nothing wrong with it. You grew up in a house that had lots of give and take. You grew up with my brothers, where what other people would consider borderline bloodthirsty conflict was just the norm. And you talked about people and ideas in vigorous ways. Not everybody does. And if somebody comes to me and says, how can you talk about that idea? I'm trying not to talk about people much, but sort of political ideas, for example. Let's pick something that's sort of out there somewhere. When you talk about the way that party thinks or that kind of ideology thinks, it makes me wonder how you can still preach. Well, if somebody tells me that, I've got a couple of options. I can say, well, you're wrong, because I can do whatever I want, because this doesn't affect my spirit. Or I can apologize and not do it again around them. It doesn't mean necessarily that what I did was wrong. It means what I did created a situation that was difficult for them to then hear me as a preaching person. It might have made it difficult for them to go to church. That's a lot of responsibility to take on. For me to say, no, I can say whatever I want, and the fact that you can't go to church anymore isn't my problem, is absolutely wrong. And I hope I've never done it. Being a follower of Jesus, in some ways, is really easy. But in some other ways, it's really hard. And this is one of the ways it's hard. Because you have to be willing to have people tell you what they think. And you have to listen to it with respect, and then you have to do something about what you hear. Not because you want them to think you're a spectacular human being, although if they do, that's okay. You do it because you don't want to be the barrier between them and the growth in faith that everybody wants. One of the places we see this frequently, perhaps not so much in the Presbyterian Church, but certainly in some other denominations, is this whole tricky question about the responsible consumption of alcohol. And I'm not talking about, you know, being dumb. I'm talking about the responsible consumption of alcohol is a real issue for some people. And I know a number of people who have no difficulty whatsoever with anyone in the world, including themselves, consuming alcohol in a responsible way, but they have chosen not to themselves because they don't want people who see them as a particular kind of person to paint them with the wrong brush. Does that mean you're caving in to somebody else? No. There are people who will try and tell you that their weakness needs to control your behavior, and those people have got a different issue that we'll talk about perhaps some other day. Joe Aldrich calls them professional weaker brothers. These are the people who find something wrong with you no matter what. We're not talking about those. We're talking about people who are honestly grappling with something that for them is a symbol of control or bondage or a way of life they no longer want to be part of. That for you is none of those things. And it's your responsibility that when you find out that's the case, to limit yourself there, not because of anything about you, but because of them, and because you love them. Over and over and over in Scripture, we are told to be like God, to be like Jesus, not in judgment, not in omniscience, but in love. John tells us in one of his letters that people will know that we follow Jesus, not because of where we are at 11 o'clock on Sunday, but because of how we love each other. Love for other people doesn't guarantee that you will get your own way all the time. It doesn't guarantee you'll never get your own way, although some days it may feel that way. Loving other people says that what is good for them is more important than what I'm allowed to do. All of us live our lives this way most of the time. This passage of Scripture wasn't put in the Bible for us this day to change all of our behaviors. What it's here for is that ongoing reminder that this is part of who we are. That we love people enough that we are willing to do without things that we can legitimately enjoy because it's better for them. It's better for them because we love them. And the nice thing is, there aren't a lot of these things. But when they pop up, and maybe you're thinking in the past when they popped up, and maybe you're thinking about something that's current, or maybe you just need to tuck it away for a future day. But it's likely that at some point, for the best of somebody else, you will give something up. And that's not just okay. That's a good thing. We give up things so other people will have a way forward that has no barriers. And if we can do that, then we're doing exactly what we should do. It doesn't mean that when you limit things, you're somehow saying, well, I guess I was wrong all along. That's not it at all. And if somebody else wants to think that about you, let them. They'll get over it at some point. When you limit yourself because you love other people, you are being as Christ-like as a human being can be. And that's what we want to be. As followers of Jesus, we want to be more like him all the time. And this is one of the ways we do it. So as you go into this day and this week and the rest of your days and weeks, and you occasionally run into people who just have an issue with something that you don't, remember that Paul was willing to become a vegetarian if he needed to make sure that nobody had a problem with what he did. If Paul can do it, I think we probably can too. And that's the call. To be the kind of person that builds up the people around us, not because we want to be known as human architects, but because it's love that builds up.